Krishna Nika Comedy, Fourth Ray of Light, Midday Pastimes, Majana Lila, 10:48 a.m. to 3:36 p.m. Shyama removes all traces of pain and sorrow from the gopis with the melodious sound of his flute, and then secretly slips into the auspicious spring forest. Balaram and the other coward boys are too busy with their cows to notice Krishna's sudden departure. However, several young boys, who are expert in the ways of Krishna's Sringara Ras, understand Krishna's intentions. Krishna's sweet form. The lustrous beauty of Krishna's form devastates the pride of a mirror crafted from the best of blue sapphires. Millions of cupids perish at the sight of Krishna's splendid form, which is brighter than a million suns and sweeter than a million moons. Krishna's glossy, bluish-black, long wavy hair is soft and scented and most pleasing to the eye. Beauty personified serves Krishna's lotus face, which easily defeats the splendor of the moon. Continuous waves of lustrous beauty flow across Madhava's face at every moment. Shyam's forehead, whose upper portion is covered with curly locks, is the acme of effulgence. Anointed with attractive, colorful tilak, Krishna's forehead is the abode of all auspiciousness, sweetness, and beauty. Damodar's dancing eyebrows, which are unique components of his beauty that express his desires and conquer the influence of Cupid's bow, resemble a row of bees clinging to his lotus face. The edges of the two beautiful, elongated, blooming eyes of the destroyer of Aga, Sin, contract without cause. Red like lotus and covered with thick eyelashes, Krishna's eyes forever roll in intoxication. Krishna's nose, which is more attractive than a sesame flower, bends down gracefully like the beautiful beak of a parrot. His nostrils flare like the arrow quiver of Cupid. The Makara Kundala earrings, which dangle from Shyam's ears, enhance the beauty of his cheeks and look like two extra petals on the lotus of his face. The beauty of Shyam's cheeks reflecting the movements of his jeweled earrings and kissed by the dear gopis winning a wager is enhanced by his soft smile. Krishna's radiant pursed lips defeat the red Banduli flower in color and withhold a reservoir of sweet nectar. Marked with fine lines from his amorous pastimes, Krishna's red lips display tremendous pride. Krishna's auspicious chin, with its lower and middle parts being deep, resembles a pair of ripe jambu fruits and flows with streams of nectar. Krishna's smile reveals his magnificent teeth, which are more lustrous than a host of pearls. Marked with red lines surpassing a pile of shikara jewels and colored like ripe pomegranate seeds, Krishna's teeth are the essence of spiritual pastimes. Krishna's glorious pink tongue, which adds inconceivable glory to the sweet beauty of his face, emerges like a new petal from the center of a lotus. His attractive neck, which puts blue sapphires to shame, is marked with three deep, beautiful lines. Madhava's broad chest, the abode of Lakshmi, is raised like a jeweled door and radiant with the Srivatsa, that is white hair curling to the right, and the Kastuba gem. Krishna's most auspicious back, which dips slightly in the middle and spreads out to his broad shoulders, is thickly built at the root of the arms and fully developed on the sides. Krishna's powerful long arms challenge the legs of elephants. These arms, which the gopis repeatedly kiss, are like jeweled sacrificial pillars for binding his lovers during amorous sports. Krishna has well-formed hands with radiant nails and rings of gold, diamond, sapphire, ruby, and pearl on each finger. His fingers resemble snakes with five jeweled heads. What man would not lose his intelligence on seeing Shyam's handsome abdomen, which is shaped like an ashvata leaf, being broad at the top and narrow at the waist? His waist has three distinct lines created by the raised and indented portions of his torso and a deep navel like a lake. Who would not become intoxicated seeing a creeper of beautiful hairs rising from the well of Krishna's navel and resting boldly over the skin of his abdomen? Shiva's Damaru drum, would crumble to pieces on seeing the graceful waist of Krishna, which is narrow enough to grasp in one fist. Shyam has raised, rounded buttocks. His hips are bound by a golden belt of bells, which emanates a garland of sparkling light rays and conquers the best of Veenas with its tinkling sound. Who would not become greedy on seeing the breadth, thickness, power, and dark complexion of his thighs, which surpass Brahma's creation of the banana trunk? Krishna's knees, which are neither bony nor too prominent, are graceful, muscular, rounded, and more gorgeous than the brilliant treasure chest of Cupid. Who could walk away from Krishna after seeing his slender shanks, which narrow gracefully below his knees like the flow of the sweetest honey? Krishna's calf muscles are a bubbling ocean of rasa, two blade balls of Cupid, and more beautiful than Kadamba blossoms. Krishna's attractive feet spread out like the streams from a river of sweetness and bestow the supreme happiness. They reflect the luster of lotuses, are tinted the color of rubies, ornamented with the sparkling glow of his toenails, and marked with the attractive symbols of a flag, lotus, barley corn, and elephant goad. In this way, Brajendranandana bestows the topmost limits of whatever his devotees desire, and Krishna completely destroys the pride of other youth's beauty as he enjoys his pastimes in Vrindavan. Meeting with the gopis. With the intention of meeting Krishna to enjoy amorous affairs, the exquisitely beautiful Radha arrives at the rendezvous place in a secluded grove within the forest. Vrindadevi has arranged everything perfectly for Radha's pleasure. On the pretext of gathering flowers, Radha and the Sakis leave Yavat and come to this forest with great eagerness to see their beloved. The clever Sakis, intensely longing to see the pastimes of love, ascertain the whereabouts of Krishna, who continually churns the ocean of rasa. Saying, "Come over here, come over here," they bring their friends just near Krishna. As the moon-faced Radha plucks flowers from the creepers with her friends, she hears the attractive melody of Krishna's lover named Vamsi. Krishna's flute song resounds throughout the forest and flows into the ears of the gopis to saturate their hearts with bliss. Goosebumps erupt on their bodies. Torrents of tears pour from their eyes, and their immobilized hands can no longer grasp the flowers. These best of women have often seen the object of their love. Yet every time they see Krishna, it seems as if they are seeing him for the first time. Such is the contrary nature of prema. And even when the gopis see Krishna, they proudly hide their love and continue picking flowers. The gopis' conversation. Vishakha laughingly says, "Hey, Radhe, don't pluck the flowers from this creeper because it has become full of blossoms during the waning phase, Krishna Paksha, of the moon. The internal meaning of this is, it has taken shelter of Krishna. Her hands in the form of branches are pulling your dress to indicate that you should pluck the flower of Krishna's heart." Radha replies, "This creeper bears special white flowers like the waxing phase, Sukla Paksha of the moon. Why do you say that it blossoms during the waning phase, Krishna Paksha? As this creeper cannot bear the pain of my separation from Krishna, it is simply distracting me for amusement." The internal meaning is, "This creeper, being favorable to Krishna, is laughing at me by showing its white flowers. How then can you say that she understands my pain of separation and is trying to divert my mind?" Vishakha says, "O fool, you must be careful because a black bee is approaching with the intention of tasting your attractive face, thinking it to be a lotus. Beware, because black things do not have good character." Radha says, "Oh, when women like you show their lotus faces, how is it possible that the bee would taste my scentless face?" Vishakha says, "Oh, beautiful-eyed one, it is the custom on earth that one should not touch a woman during her period. Pushpavati, the time of flowering. Therefore, O friend, do not touch this creeper. But during this month of Madhu, Chaitra, March, April, the jasmine creeper is covered with tender leaves, devoid of flowers, and therefore pure and suitable to touch. Internal meaning is, Radha, just as the jasmine is the best among the creepers, you are the best of the gopis and famous as the most pure lady in Braj. Especially during this month of Chaitra, you have assumed attractive ornaments of love, suitable for being touched by Madhusudana. Radha says, all the creepers in this forest are pure, even though they are flowering, Pushpavati. The wind purifies the entire universe and destroys all suffering just by touching them. Internal meaning is, even though all the Braja gopis are flowering, they are still the most pure. By touching them, the crest jewel of fickleness purifies the whole universe and destroys all suffering. Vishaka says, hey, Saki, look at this attractive flowering Ashok tree. Quickly go serve it. All the Brajavasis are going there to collect piles of excellent red flowers. And the internal meaning is, see this generous male decorated with flowers. Go serve him. Those who approach Krishna attain intense attraction for him. Radha says, hey, Saki, please understand that I will not touch even the name of a man bearing a body filled with lust. Keep that Ashoka tree far away from me. O intelligent one, you can go there. Internal meaning is, I do not want to even hear the name of that lover. Keep that cheater far away. If you are so clever, then you go and associate with him. Vishaka says, just see there how attractive the punaga tree stands with its beautiful, delicate flowers. Internal meaning is, see how beautifully Krishna stands with his attractive form, exuding a fragrance that manifests a host of qualities to bewitch your eyes and mind. Radha says, what you previously mentioned about other trees is also a fault in this tree. But stretch out your arms to pick its flowers and you will be satisfied. You should try for that tree with the attractive blossoms. The internal meaning is, you should worship Krishna and you will be satisfied. You can attain him because of your elevated position. Surely you are desirous of attaining that one who dresses in fancy clothes. While eavesdropping on the Saki's speech and beautiful-eyed Radha's witty answers, Shri Krishna, the cunning Rasika, mulls over how to attract Radha. Overwhelmed with the desire to enjoy, Krishna thinks in his heart, if I directly approach the Sakis now, then this charming conversation will abruptly end. So I will continue to listen from this hidden place in the creepers. Great desire has arisen in their hearts, but externally they show the opposite. Eventually I will subdue them all. These Sakis let me hear their sweet words, which reveal their enchanted minds and inspire me with loving feelings. Though they are filled with love for me, out of pride, they do not even glance at me. Desiring to destroy Radha's pride, Krishna plays captivating melodies on his flute while leisurely walking toward a grove of creepers. Radha responds to the gopis. The gopis say, the scent of Harichandana, that is a type of sandalwood, which conquers all other scents without obstruction, is spreading everywhere and coming this way to bind us. Radha replies, how has a lion, Hari, come here? And from where did he get sandalwood paste, Chandana? Hey, Sakis, just pick flowers and don't be afraid. An intelligent person fears not without a cause. The internal meaning is, if the lion comes, we will satisfy him by decorating him with our flower garlands. The Sakis say, hey Saki, we can't hear the enchanting tunes of the flute anymore. Has the most beautiful Brajendranandana gone away? Radha says, it is just the wind shaking the dry bamboos in the forest that creates that sound, O lotus-eyed ones. You mistake that sound for Krishna's flute. Whether is the lotus-eyed romantic hero or not, please don't describe his qualities and express your heartfelt desires. By associating with fickle women like you, I've also become frightened. Enough playing in the forest. Oh, Lalita, I'm going home. You can all stay here and amuse yourselves. Lita says, without becoming angry, why don't you just complete the task for which you came here? After finishing the work, we will all leave together. An unfulfilled task is never praiseworthy. Here is an exquisitely fragrant forest garland of multicolored flowers. If you like, please adorn yourself with it. Who would not become blinded by the scent of the punaga, supreme male tree, whose fragrance spreads everywhere and causes the bees, all bees, or women, to show their pride? Isn't this forest beautiful? Aren't the flowers blooming here? Isn't the Nagakeshara situated here? Isn't your mind inclined to amorous affairs in this place? Radha says, just go to that place where flowers are easily obtained. Discontinue this fruitless discussion, and I don't want any flower ornaments, so I'll have no doubt about it. Lalita says, look, we don't want the flowering creepers, which are female, and according to you, the flowering trees, which are male, are also detestable. So tell us if we can go to some neuter grove to pick flowers. Internal meaning. We will search out that person decorated with flowers and adorn your neck with him. Radha says, let's not think of these things any longer, lest our desires become fruitless. Does not the woman in love long to see the beautiful objects of the grove? After listening to Radha, the lotus-eyed Sakis surround her like a garland of lightning and start walking towards Krishna. Going to the love grove. The beautiful necklaces swaying gently on Radha's breasts and the tinkling ankle bells of her attendant Sakis combine to spread beauty in every direction as they walk slowly and gracefully through the forest. Bees swarm in the sky and darken it with their fluttering wings upon smelling the sweet fragrance of the gopis' lotus faces. Wherever Radha casts her furtive glances, it seems to rain petals of blue lotuses that satisfy the excited bees. Wherever the effulgence of Radha's body shines, which is more brilliant than lightning in a clear blue sky, that place becomes completely illumined, just as the full moon illuminates a dark place. Wherever the rays from Radha's toenails dance like waves upon the bosom of the earth, the Chakora birds, even in the daylight, open their beaks to plunder that moonlight. The grove where the gallant Brajendranandana waits radiates a splendor suitable for the battle of Eros. Krishna's flute and the gopis' love. Seeing the gopis approaching the grove, Krishna's feverish mind somewhat pacifies. The gopis, who are so disturbed while plucking flowers, lose their composure when the sound of Krishna's flute enters their ears. Their hands start shaking, their bodies tremble like those of deer, their eyes dart here and there, and they become stunned. Tiny bumps of joy appear on their cheeks, and continuous tears flow from their lotus eyes. Though trying, they cannot control their emotions at all. Looking at Radha, one gopi says, that flute which you derided as a piece of dry bamboo is now forcing you to humbly glorify it. Another Saki says, why are you joking with her like that? Without any discrimination, Radha is teaching you the limits of self-control. Don't you see? Radha's body erupts in goosebumps from the touch of the cool wind, and her eyes shed tears because of the flower pollen blowing in the air. Moon-faced Radha, the leader of all the Sakis, angrily replies to the gopis, my purpose in associating with you has now been fulfilled. Krishna meets the gopis. After relishing the arguments of the gopis, Krishna, the hero of all women, emerges from the grove while smiling sweetly. Seeing that most desirable youth, the thief who steals the jewel of their minds, the gopis become stunned like stationary lightning in the sky. Shama's necklaces sway excitedly as he eagerly approaches those most beautiful girls in the creation. Like the black stone used for testing gold, Krishna speaks sweetly to measure the depth of their prema. Krishna says, O my beautiful face gopis, Is it because of your expertise that you have come here without hindrance? I am very affectionate toward you. So tell me, what can I do for you? Let your sweet voices reveal your desires. O gopis, I think that you are my most auspicious guests in this auspicious forest. Surely I have attained such guests as a result of my previous pious activities. O gopis, you can accept from me the most suitable worship without any cause for blame. But if you do not accept, it will be an offense on my part. However, can there be any offense for you? One Sakhi replies, Yes, we know that you are the son of the king of Braja, who is famous for his impeccable character, and you are the purifier of your dynasty. The internal meaning is, you are the player of the flute that bewilders us. O moon of the family of Nanda, we are not qualified to accept worship from you. Another Sakhi adds, For a person who has millions of wonderful qualities, what is the significance of a single fault? So we can accept worship from this ocean of good qualities. Radha considers how to advise Lalita and Vishanka, who expertly give charming arguments for her pleasure. Arguments with the Lord of the Forest. One Sakhi says, O Krishna, surely you have lost your intelligence. This forest shelters all people, beasts, and birds without distinction. So why do you show off your possessive instincts by claiming it is yours? Krishna replies, Though the forest makes no distinctions, he who has qualification becomes its master. This is the truth. However, I do not wish to quarrel with women like you who are intent on worshipping the gods. Internal meaning, who are intent on enjoying pastimes with me. When the arguments become outrageous, lotus-eyed Radha flushes with intense enthusiasm and speaks out joyfully. Without showing a speck of pride, Radha smilingly says, Hey, Sakhis, just hear my words. Give up all these useless exchanges which end in fruitless arguments. He is but one and you are many, but do not act rashly due to envy. After all, he is the son of Rajaraj Nanda, and therefore worthy of your respect. Krishna addresses Radha, O fortunate one, I speak the truth when I say that I am not different from you. Everyone knows I am yours. Should I not have some pride because of that? Hearing her beloved's words, Golden Radha thinks to herself, Because I said he should be respected, now he speaks such sweet words. Krishna continues, O my dear one, I have come to you because I am dependent on you. Though I am an ocean of good qualities, I am your servant. What can I do to please you? As the Sakhis hear these amazing words from their beloved, their pride, which is like bubbles of foam, suddenly disappears. Playing in the forest. Krishna then enters the forest with these innocent, love-struck women and enjoys himself in the bowers finely constructed from trees and creepers. Plucking the bakula flowers, Krishna strings flower necklaces, armlets, and belts for the gopis. Krishna cuts the ketaki petals with his nails to produce vishtika and karnika ornaments. He applies beautiful tilak on their foreheads made from a mixture of thick honey and the pollen from Naga Keshara flowers. Krishna makes pearl-like necklaces from perfectly round and evenly colored large malika buds, and then hangs them over the gopis' breasts. Using the hollow end of his flute, Jam cuts small circles out of tender leaves to create circular ear ornaments for the gopis. The gopis in turn make ornaments for Krishna. Cupid acts as their main helper to collect just the right flowers. When Radha extends her arms to pick some Naga Keshara flowers, the king of amorous intentions seizes the opportunity to embrace her in his snake-like arms. Thinking that this is not the best type of help, Radha, her body trembling, says, O cheater, king of rogues, let go of me, let go of me. I don't want these flowers. When Krishna releases her, Radha drops down and glares angrily at Krishna's face. The Sakis smile mildly to please the divine couple and then speak some amazing riddles just suitable for the occasion. When the man marked the pomegranate with his right fingernails, she let out a cry, showing her attractive teeth. When the lover joined his lips to the red petal, she hid her face, though excited by the prospects of love. When the eager lover embraced the creeper loaded with flower clusters, the jewel of youthfulness, Radha, protected herself by crossing her arms in a display of anger. After entertaining the divine couple, the Sakis begin to decorate them. One Saki offers Krishna earrings made from various colored leaves and white and yellow flower petals. One Saki crafts a flute as brilliant as Krishna's by using white, yellow, green, and red leaves. One fortunate Saki creates a crown of champaka flowers and a belt of Naga Keshara flowers that resembles Cupid's Veena. Water sports in the summer forest. After enjoying various forest pastimes in the pursuit of amorous bliss, Krishna still feels unsatisfied, so he hurries to the forest called the Joy of Summer. This forest abounds in blooming Sirisi flowers and thick clusters of Patali and Kutaja flowers. Krishna enters the forest and sits in a pleasant spot under a flowering tree to rest. The breeze, fragrant with Patali flowers and the Chamara-like Sirisa flowers, shakes the edges of the gopis' clothing. The soothing breeze refreshes their tired bodies and faces, which had become faded from the fatigue of walking. In order to probe the secrets of amorous sports, like a commentary on the scriptures concerning love, the gopis desire to play frivolously in Radhakund, whose banks are covered with assorted jewels. They arrive at Radhakund and rest for a few moments in a kunja cottage. Vrindadevi has kept many enjoyable, colorful, and noteworthy edibles, drinks, clothing, and other items suitable for summer within this jeweled cottage. This house of conjugal pleasure, Ratikeli Mandir, lies amidst a cluster of jeweled lotuses. Inside the house is the best of beds with many pillows and sheets. Krishna expresses his intense desire for water sport by purifying all the fierce aquatic animals of their anger and envy before banishing them from the bathing place. The sand on the riverbank shines like powdered camphor, and the Saivala water plants glisten like jeweled creepers. The waves in Radhakund are her goosebumps of joy, and the sapari fish are her agitated glances. With her wave-like hands and the cries of the egrets calling out, "Come here, come here," Radhakund beckons lovingly to the gopis. With moon-white chamaras in the form of the wings of restlessly flying young ducks, Radhakund seems to be fanning the slender gopis. The lotus flowers in the water sway rhythmically back and forth. The female bees and their consorts sing sweet songs. The trees shower fragrant flowers and the birds call out, "Jai, Jai." While standing on one of the many jeweled bathing ghats beside Radhakund, the gopis notice all these attractive features and decide to play in the water with Krishna. Radhakund thrills when the Sakis enter her waters up to their knees, loins, navels, or breasts. Through her waters are crystal clear and devoid of mud, Radhakund becomes muddied from the kumkum and scents washing off the hands and feet of the youthful gopis. The water birds call out blissfully to the clouds and flap their wings to form a canopy to block the rays of the sun. Countless flocks of chortling swans, cranes, and egrets continuously glide over the gentle waves of Radhakund. An enchanting forest lies along the beautiful bank of Radhakund. Within that forest is a gorgeous grove perfectly arranged for pastimes of pleasure. Herds of deer jump about and colorful birds chirp sweetly. Creepers playfully caress the many pleasure-giving trees. Though eager for play, the gopis become very serious, not due to fear of their elders, but out of fear of losing Krishna's company. Therefore, they assemble together in one group. One gopi, afraid of ruining the flower ornament Krishna has made for her, remains standing on the bank. Noticing this gopi, the other doe-eyed gopis lovingly try to pull her into the water. Seeing her reluctance, they laugh and splash water on her with their lotus hands. As their beauty increases, The faces of the gopis make friends with the lotuses. Their breasts make friends with the Chakravaka birds, and their navels make friends with the whirlpools. All the gopis hold hands to form a golden net. Then they surround Krishna with their golden net, just as the moonlight surrounds the clouds. Caught in their net, Krishna induces the dancer of his glance to dance. Thus conquering the eyes of the gopis, Krishna breaks their net with a huge wave of water. The gopis draw near Krishna and dump water over his head. Covering his eyes with his hands, Krishna tolerates the downpour. Then Krishna drenches the gopis with waves of water. This stuns the bodies of all the gopis, but their blissful faces remain effulgent as the orb of the full moon. As the happiness reaches the crescendo, Radha, whose face resembles a lotus, whose eyebrows are a swarm of bees, and whose arms are water lily stems, makes friends with the Kund and submerges herself in the water. Suddenly, Radhika starts sprinkling Shyam with water from her lotus bud hands. The sound of her jeweled bangles, echoing like the water weapon of Cupid, is intolerable for Krishna, who desires victory in the water fight. Using her cupped hands like a water-bearing cloud, Radha in great amusement soaks Krishna with thick streams of water. It seems that as the continuous streams of water fall upon Krishna's chest, he is being pierced by the irresistible power of Cupid's flower arrows. Krishna's garland falls apart and his pearl necklace breaks. Only his Kostuba gem withstands defeat. See if you can beat my water barrage. After boasting like this, Krishna laughs and blissfully splashes Radha's face with pleasurable streams of water. Though afflicted by Krishna's splashing, restless-eyed Radha easily tolerates it by covering her eyes with her lotus hands. Radha's desires are so astonishing. The Lotus Battle. As the battle of water splashing comes to a close, the bliss of love begins. The graceful lotus-eyed gopis initiate the battle of lotuses. The sakis pluck all the unfading lotuses and hand them to Radha. Raising her arm over her head to show her armpit, Radha bombards Krishna's chest with a volley of lotus flowers. After catching all of Radha's lotuses, Krishna, overcome with ecstasy, laughs and throws them back at Radha. Due to being thrown back and forth in this way and associating with Radhasham's hands, the lotuses become both lusty and attractive. The back and forth movements of the bees pursuing those fragrant lotus flowers resemble the arrows of the divine couple's glances. Radhika's eyes roll lazily. Her chest heaves and her breathing deepens. Yet Radha's thirst for sport increases more and more. When a bee forsakes the lotus to take shelter of Radha's lotus face, and a sampari fish takes shelter of her feet, Radha becomes startled and fearfully clings to her lover's chest. Abandoning all fear, the sakis surround Radhasham, raise their arms, and laugh loudly as they bombard them with lotus flowers. Radhasham laughed blissfully while holding lotus leaves above their heads to ward off the barrage of the gopis' lotus flowers. What should the sakis do now that their leader Radha has given up the fight? The water birds on Krishna's side spread their wings and begin to dance. Seeing Radha, slightly bent over and standing up to her breasts in water, two Chakravaka birds approach her breasts, mistaking them to be their own species. Noticing this with great pleasure, Krishna tries to touch those two birds with his hands, but Radha covers her breasts with her crossed arms. When Krishna offers thick, rounded lotus stems, his arms, to Radha's neck, the creeper of her arms erupts in goosebumps. Just see the spectacle of prema. Searching for Krishna. Krishna says to Radha, O Sakhi, have your Sakhis surround me on all sides, and you stay right here without moving. I will dunk myself in the water, and you all try to find and hold me. With a word from Radha, The Sakis take up positions around Krishna, who then submerges in the water. The gopis spread out their arms like a luminous circular net to search for Krishna. While moving closer to Radha, the gopis gradually decrease the diameter of their circle. Nearing Radha, the gopis crowd together and agitate the water by forcefully moving their delicate hands. With great joy, the gopis gather around Radha. But not finding Krishna, they just stand there and start laughing. Radha asks, "Who among you has let that mischievous one escape?" One after another, the Sakis defend themselves by saying, "I didn't let him get by, but somehow he fled out of fear of you." "Oh, Saki, you must certainly know his whereabouts. What can we know about your fleeing lover? We see the fresh marks of amorous affairs on your body, so why are you hiding something from us, who depend on you alone?" Despite the gopis joking, Radha becomes anxious and worries due to separation from her lover. For a second, Radhika ponders the gopis' words, and then casts her glance here and there. The humming of a swarm of bees indicates the location of playful, happy Krishna, hiding among some water lilies. Fearing he may escape, the Sakis form a tight circle and quickly surround Krishna. Like generals in the battle of love, the gopis savor the taste of victory. Then, with a glance from his lotus eyes, Krishna releases a honey-sweet flow of mercy to satisfy the hearts of the gopis. Krishna nonchalantly says, "Hey, Sakis, why are you surrounding me as I play by myself in this cluster of lilies? Though defeated, why are you so shameless? Would you like to fight again?" The gopis smile slightly and then angrily reply to Krishna upon hearing his sweet but scolding words. "Giving up the battle of lotuses, you fled and hid among these flowers. Though defeated by the most skillful women, you submerge yourself in the water for a moment and escape somehow or other by deceit. Don't you have any shame?" Radha speaks, "Who should know this? Indeed, to whom should one tell this? It is not suitable to tell to anyone. Thus he has gone to the water lilies and told them of his defeat at your hands. As he is one and you are many, it is natural that he lost." Hearing Radha's words, Krishna develops a desire. "O beautiful one," says Krishna, "come here. You alone are my side and know my heart. The opposing side does not know my intentions at all. Therefore, I will worship you alone." Saying this, Krishna begins decorating Radha with great enthusiasm. He hangs lotus seed husks on Radha's ears. He crafts an attractive hair ornament for Radha from the best of leaves and flower petals. Using powdered lotus pollen, Krishna draws many intricate designs on Radha's breast to intimate his inner desires. He fashions a jeweled belt from the saival of plants and a necklace from the stem of water lilies. Krishna beautifies Radha's cheeks with colored lotus pollen. The gopis celebrate their victory by taking water in one hand and striking it with the other hand to imitate the sound of frogs jumping in water. Though the gopis' bodies are tired, their minds yearn for more and more pastimes. As the gopis leave the water, Radhakund feels great sorrow. Her yellow lotuses had become the servants of the gopis' faces. Her blue lotuses had become the servants of their eyes. Her Chakravartika birds had become the servants of their breasts. Her water lily stems had become the servants of their arms. The gopis' faces attain the beauty of the lotuses. Their arms attain the beauty of the water lily stems. Their breasts attain the beauty of the Chakravartika birds. And their eyes attain the beauty of the blue lotuses. In this way, a great friendship is established between Radhakund and the gopis. Witness the greatness of Krishna's water sports. Krishna's pastimes grant liberation because they are beyond bondage, beyond attachment, beyond contamination, beyond the three modes of nature, and beyond material description. Krishna liberated the gopis by his water sports. During his water sports, Krishna broke the necklaces of the gopis. The internal meaning is Guna Nash. The three modes of nature were destroyed. The gopis' hair braids became loose. Internal meaning, they were released from bondage. The color of the gopis' lips faded. Internal meaning, material attachment vanished. The gopis' bangles stopped ringing. Internal meaning, they ceased to speak material words. The gopis' belts became loose. Internal meaning, they became liberated. The gopis, too embarrassed to take off their thin white bathing clothes, just stand on the bank of Radhakund. As the water drips from their bodies, it appears that their pitiable bodies are weeping tears. Their tired bodies look pale, and their weary eyes resemble red lotuses. This combination is very attractive to Krishna. Some gopis quit playing early in the game. After bathing, drying, and dressing, they go ahead to a cloth-decorated grove in the forest around Radhakund and wait there to serve Radha Madhava. Meanwhile, the sakis in the water, forgetting all the difficulties incurred during the water sports, lovingly perform a splendid Avabrita bath, that is a ritual bath after a ceremony, to conclude the sacrifice of Radha Shyam's water pastimes. With heartfelt devotion, the sakis, their bodies dripping with perspiration, increase the beauty of the divine couple by sprinkling them with water from their graceful lotus bud hands, jingling with bracelets. They cover Radha Shyam's bodies with lotus pollen, petals, stamens, and stalks. First, they cleanse Radha Shyam's hair with a mixture of scented oil and perfumes and then rub their limbs. Thus, the sakis bathe the divine couple with water and then take their baths. Afterwards, Radha Govinda and the sakis proceed to the pleasure groves on the banks of Radhakund. Dressing Radha Govinda. The devoted gopis who had earlier come from the Kund now serve Radha and Krishna in various ways in a grove filled with the sound of humming bees. Some gopis, eager to serve the divine couple, stand outside and peek into the grove. They patiently wait to offer the ornaments and clothing they have prepared, which are just suitable for the summer. Within their heart of hearts, these gopis relish the sweet bliss generated from selfless service. Madhubati Sakhi and Indumati remove the water from Radhika's hair with a soft cloth. Madhuri Sakhi, Madhurika, and Manimala wipe Radha's limbs, while Madhavi Sakhi, Manimati, and Sashileka bring clothing and ornaments. Lalita Sakhi, Vishaka, Shamala, Komudi, Kumudini, and Madhaleka also render various services to Brishabhanu Nandini, whose beautiful golden body defeats the brilliance of a cluster of lightning flashes. Two groups of sakis help each other arrange their own clothes and then eagerly approach Krishna. With the intention of dressing Krishna in clothing and ornaments which are just suitable for summer, Radha, her heart brimming with love, walks up to Krishna and embraces him. While Radha ties Krishna's hair in a topknot, she leans over and kisses his forehead. Then Radhika fixes an excellent crown made from the malika buds on Krishna's head. Using the tip of a small brush, Radhika daubs Krishna's body with cool sandalwood water mixed with fragrant camphor. After playfully draping a necklace of malika flowers on his chest, Radhika decorates Krishna with jeweled armlets, bracelets, and hanging earrings. She ties ankle bells on Krishna's feet that have toenails more brilliant than the moon. Radha uses sandalwood paste to draw a crescent moon-shaped tilak on Krishna's forehead. Radha hangs a thin yellow chador over Krishna's shoulders. This beautiful chador flutters in the breeze and accents the gorgeous beauty of Shama's body, ointments, and decorations. Forest picnic. A group of doe-eyed sakis named Komudi, Komudini, Komudvati, Sitala, Asasikala, Kalavati, Rupa Manjari, Ananga Manjari, Deli Manjari, and Ashok Manjari, who are skillful at preparing picnic lunches, meet Vrinda Devi and her Vana Devis to arrange for a forest picnic. They have divine, fine-quality, soft white rice with grains separated as if at enmity with each other. The rice is sprinkled with fragrant butter and pure buttermilk. Though all the items had been packed in new earthen vessels and brought from the house early in the morning, they appear spotlessly pure and fresh. The Sakis have brought loads of excellent, nourishing yogurt, which is as brilliant as the moon, white as camphor, and which conquers the milk ocean in sweetness. Brenda and her associates supply emerald green cups made of palisa leaves to hold the sweet, succulent pomegranate juice, and an ambrosial juice made from tala fruit. There are full bowls of white coconut that shine like the moon, tender bijapura, and tala fruit seeds which are as soft as cotton, and also bowls of roots and sprouts. There are bowls of peeled lotus seeds, fat, oily keshura, tangerine and sweet pilu fruits, slices of tasty ripe red mangoes, firm and fragrant sweet grapes, newly sprouted mung beans with salt and ginger, to give a zesty taste, and other bowls filled with slices of juicy sugar cane. There are clear crystal glasses and decanters full of mango juice that fill the air with its sweet fragrance. There are cooling drinks made from a mixture of camphor, pepper, and ample sugar. There is a pile of coconut pulp cut in conch-shaped pieces and covered with a soft cloth to preserve its sweetness and fragrance. Radha deftly picks up a little of each sweet, fragrant item and then puts it in Krishna's hand while smiling sweetly. Taking a beautiful knife, Radhika expertly cuts a mango and blissfully offers the pieces to the lotus hands of her beloved. After selecting the best quality mangoes, Radha squeezes out the juice into golden cups with her own hands to offer to Krishna. Whatever Radha offers with her beautiful hands, Krishna eats with great relish. But Shyamasundara, whose lotus face shines with his lotus eyes, finishes his forest picnic and performs achman. After filling his mouth with excellent scented spices mixed with camphor, Krishna lies down on a jeweled platform below a tree near the entrance of a kunja. As the time approaches for receiving Krishna's remnants, the hearts of the gopis become unsteady due to their eagerness to honor Krishna's prasad. All the Sakis think, first our leader Radha should eat, and afterwards we will eat separately. Knowing their thoughts, Radha says, O faithful Vrinda, we will all eat together. Expertly distribute all the remnants, because without you I can't do anything, what to speak of eating. The Sakis sit in a circle. Then Vrinda serves Radha and all the Sakis one by one. Vrinda induces each Saki to relish Krishna's prasadam. After finishing the served items, everyone understands that each item has become tastier due to the touch of their Krishna's lips. While enjoying the bliss of associating together, Radha and her Sakis gradually finish all the prasadam. Then they wash their mouths and take some delicious camphor-scented tambula. Plain dice. Krishna and the bimba red-lipped gopis gather at the place set aside for playing dice. The gopis are expert at dice, and their minds are excited with the ecstasies of love. What a splendorous sight to see Brajendra Nandana surrounded by the most beautiful of all women, sitting on a sapphire platform under a tree at the edge of the grove. Brinda, who perfectly knows the hints of Radha and the gopis, says to Hari, O lotus-eyed one, let us see your skill at playing dice. Just see. This game board is skillfully crafted with wood and gold inlaid lines. The beautiful plain pieces, pawns, are made of emerald and gold. O Krishna, whose beautiful long arms reach to the knees, the attractive dice are made of ivory and elegantly marked. It is astonishing that you have not yet become absorbed in a nice dice game to increase your pleasure 100-fold. Hearing this, Krishna smiles and accepts the challenge, saying, Let the women prepare themselves and come play with me. Ever-active Vrindadevi makes all the arrangements for the game. She appoints the supremely clever and glorious Nandimukhi as her helper. Radha starts the game by shaking the dice. Krishna interjects, To make the game exciting, we must first set the wager. Let's wager my kostuba and your pearl necklace as the first stake. Let my flute and your Lalita be the second wager. O Radha, shining with eagerness for victory, if I win, I get Lalita, but if I am defeated, I will give you my flute with a smile. Radha replies, I cannot accept this unequal wager of Lalita and your flute. Can one ever compare a stick of wood with a jeweled wand? Please don't cheat in this manner. Kalavati Sakhi then says, has the third wager been decided? Radha laughs while answering, you will be my wager and Krishna's necklace will be his wager. Then one Sakhi says, I will now speak about the fourth wager. Winning this wager, you both will be satisfied and drown in the ocean of happiness. Krishna orders her, then please speak up. The Sakhi replies, O Radha, please hear my pleasing words. Your stake will be a kiss, and his will be 1,000 embraces. Radha knits her eyebrows and turns red with anger while saying, O expert one, you can play with Krishna for this wager. Another Sakhi tries to pacify Radha by clutching her hand, smiling and pleading. O Radha, this Sakhi has spoken nicely. Do not become angry with the wager. Just consider that your wager is very light, but his wager is very heavy. If you lose, you give something insignificant, but if you win, you gain something very deep. Either way, you gain the most auspicious things. O Sumugi Radhe, please sit peacefully, throw the dice at leisure, and show your talents. Pacified, Radha sits beside the game board and arranges the pieces. The pawns, illuminated by Radha's rings, reflect the nectar glow of her smile. Chandramukhi Radha adroitly lifts a pair of dice and offers them to Krishna while speaking in a low but firm voice. You throw first. Radha becomes happy to see how Krishna's hands shine with the reflections of the dice. One clever Sakhi says, Hey Radha, throw the dice. Make sure that Krishna does not win and take your necklace. You are expert and good at winning, so capture his kostuba jewel and make us happy. Krishna scores a winning number with his first throw. But to turn it otherwise, Radha picks up the dice and passes them to his hands. Again, Krishna throws a winner. He moves the pawns and thereby crushes Radha's pride. As the two expert gamblers play with knowledge of the way the dice will roll, neither can be victorious and neither can be defeated. Radha intelligently admits defeat, and Krishna accepts the victory. When Krishna comes to take her necklace, Radha personally offers it to him. Aiming to defeat Krishna, Radha raises her arm and throws the dice. Seeing this, Krishna feels anxious due to fear of defeat. After winning, Radha takes Krishna's flute and presents it to Lalita, who hugs it as if it were her own. Krishna wins the third wager and accepts the prize of Kalavati, the Sakhi filled with excellent qualities. All the gopis laugh joyfully while watching Krishna take Kalavati. In response, Kalavati reprimands them. Oh, beautiful women, don't laugh. You too will see the cunning goddess of gambling. The Sakhis say, Oh, Sakhi Radhe, Kalavati speaks correctly. Your mind is not concentrated on the game. The goddess of dice games will defeat everyone. Vrinda says, O Sakhi, when you took his beloved flute, Vanamali Krishna did not lament even a bit. Rather, he beamed a soft smile. Therefore, Sakhis, do not show much pain to get back your Sakhi Kalavati, knowing that it will be very difficult. When defeated justly, the wise of steady hearts do not lament even for a jewel. If you say, one can easily get another flute in the forest, but there is no one with qualities like Kalavati to be found on this earth, then give up the flute. Why should you be so possessive of a piece of dry bamboo? Lalita replies, O strict Vrinda, we know that you are always partial to Krishna. Because of that, you close your eyes in the daylight and can't distinguish good from bad. Being careless, our inattentive Sakhi previously lost an excellent necklace, and now she has lost our dear friend. Upon hearing Lalita's wise words, Radha, the expert gambler, cups the dice in her hands and throws them before Krishna. The gambling match between the two lovers then begins in earnest. Where the master of the game is Cupid, can there be defeat in love? Now the time comes for the fourth wager of a kiss and embraces. Though Radha will be embarrassed by his victory, she is well prepared for her victory. The dice fall only according to Radhika's desire, and Krishna plays effortlessly, showing complete self-confidence. Raising both her hands while taking her turn at throwing the dice, Radha shakes them vigorously while uttering, "Dasa, Dasa," 10, 10, or second meaning, "bite, bite." But as Radhika says this, one Sakhi objects, "O fierce Radha, you should not utter these words repeatedly. You should see that there is a black snake in front of you. O Sakhi, and previously he has given you pain by nicely biting your mind and lips." Lalita quips, "Yes, but there is also the snake of our Sakhi's eyebrows. She has already destroyed the poisonous, all-pervading influence of that black snake. Now what can that black snake do?" Hearing Lalita's words, which take revenge on Krishna, the Sakhis break out in laughter. Noble Radha, however, hangs her head in embarrassment. Since Radha and Krishna are equally intent on winning the fourth wager involving the kiss, neither can enjoy the victory. The internal meaning is, they are not eager to win since either way they will enjoy equally. Casting her shyness aside, Radha starts playing boldly with an extra effort to win. Radha plays so intensely that she completely blocks Krishna's moves. Then she doubles the wager to obstruct Krishna. Krishna cannot break Radha's position, so he smiles mildly to distract her and speaks some soft, sweet words to agitate her. Krishna says, "O beautiful one, you have very enthusiastically increased my wager. Consider it and then state it at once without reducing it." Hearing this, Radha considers, "Oh, either way, I will suffer immeasurable shame. The Sakhis will laugh among themselves, and this ocean of qualities will also laugh." As the unthinkable thoughts arise in Radha's mind, she pretends not to hear Shama's words. Laughing heartily, she keeps playing attentively. Lotus-faced Radha, her glance fixed on the game board, utters, "Vidu, Vidu," they know, they know, as she shakes the dice in her hand, which is encircled with jingling bangles. Hearing this, the Sakhis say, "See, Sakhi, who knows your desire to increase the wager of a kiss? We do not know anything, so don't be unhappy. Why are you shouting, 'They know, they know'?" The teasing words of the Sakhis make the red-rimmed eyes of Radha flutter nervously. These words combine with the crooked words of her lover to break Radha's concentration in the game. Impulsively, as if inspired by the movements of luck, Radha breaks the sequence of playing. This mistake destroys her stranglehold on Krishna's pawns. Observing this, Krishna triples the wager. The Sakhis say, "See there, don't be proud. Our dear Sakhi will certainly win." Radha throws again with a great desire for victory. Although Radha wants to win, she has no desire to enjoy the results. Radha cannot defeat Krishna, the very victory flag over the world. And Krishna cannot defeat Radha, the second victory flag over the world. Interestingly, the only winner is Cupid. The divine couple are expert in all types of arts. In the sacrifice of Cupid, Radha Govinda know the different hand movements and the procedures for placing and touching the pot. They are both attached to each other's most auspicious qualities, and they both attain their heart's desires. But time has run out, and they can't play anymore. They are compelled to quit without finishing the game. Seeing that the day has passed by, doe-eyed Radha returns Krishna's flute, and Sri Krishna, the soul of all souls, gives back her necklace. Then Vrinda and all the gopis, overwhelmed with the pain of separation, unhappily return to their homes.